ladies and gentlemen.
Tell them how it happened that night. Tell them how you looked him in the eye. A man who trusted you and killed him.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the end of our journey. Our special Harry Potter Spotlight series finally, at long last,
coming to an end.
Here are the Epic Film Guys Podcast. I, of course, am Nick.
And I am Justin. And I didn't really mean that. Not 100%, but it feels good that we're finally there. We are definitely off the original track that we set for you guys for these episodes to be released, but we're happy to finally bring them to you the week after Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, has been released. But
no,
better late than never.
It'll drop Monday.
That's right. And of course, we are joined this evening by our resident Potter expert. Yeah, we're going to name you that now. That's your name, because you know all things of the Potterverse, or should I say the Wizarding World.
Ooh.
That is Loy Sauce.
Hello, gentlemen. It's been a long road, but I'm excited to finally talk about these. Well, it's really one movie, just split into two parts, because Warner Brothers loves money. So we are at the end here with the Deathly Hallows. Let's get to it, guys.
I don't want it to end. I want to stay in Harry Potter's
Spotlight. I know,
land
dude,
forever.
Trust me.
Hey. Upon this recording, Nick, you still have yet to see Fantastic
That's
Beasts
true.
Or the sequel. That's so you true. Still have plenty of that Wizarding World goodness to go to watch, and we'll be talking about that at a later time. But Saucy, I know we have to have you do this on every episode. For those uninitiated with the Potter films, what is Deathly Hallows Part 1 all about?
Absolutely. So Harry is still reeling from the death of Albus Dumbledore from the last movie. And now Harry, along with his friends Hermione and Ron, are on their own, and they're on the lam, and they're looking for secret to Voldemort's power, the Horcruxes, and they're trying to track them down and destroy them in order to weaken him. So they're on their own, they're out on the run, and they have to rely on each other now more than ever. But of course, the Death Eaters are close on their trail. They're in extreme danger. The tagline for this movie, the original poster, said, "Nowhere is safe." And that gives you the indication that these aren't kids anymore. They're not in school. This is real danger.
Yes.
I mean, there's been plenty of danger. There's been plenty of danger the entire damn time. I love that tagline, but come on. You see that thing that Harry fights at the end of part two? Come on. That's danger, man. He could be ripped apart and eaten in 2 seconds, so...
But technically, it's always been Hogwarts that's been the safe haven, and now that there's not even that anymore, and Dumbledore's dead, and Harry's on his own. Well, he's not on his own. He has his two loyal best friends.
Yeah, you're right. All bets are off at this point, and I got to go out on a limb and start off with this. This is probably my favorite thing about this movie. Even though you kind of miss being at Hogwarts the whole time, I feel like up until this point, it's like we've seen them at Hogwarts enough movies. They've spent so much time there. I'm like, I actually like that they're off venturing about and going to different areas where you wouldn't normally see them, like where we actually see them in London in like a coffee shop or whatever. We see them actually interacting in different environments, which I thought was really refreshing.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about this film as well, is they get you out of Hogwarts. I love Hogwarts. It's just amazing production design over the course of, well, we'll see Hogwarts again, of course, in part two, but it's just been a wonderful place to kind of keep going back to see the way it changes and the way it grows and the way it evolves, and to see how much they can desaturate the color out of it in the Half-Blood Prince. But it's nice. Yeah, the fight that they have with the two Death Eaters in the coffee shop is actually one of my favorite little set pieces in this film. And this film, to go to Justin's complaint about part six, there's not a lot of action in that film. In this film, tons more action. Like, there are a lot of action set pieces because, as Loisaw said, they're on the run. Like, they are just constantly, like, the whole Wizarding World is kind of collapsing in on itself. The Ministry of Magic is being overtaken by the Death Eaters, who believe that only pureblood wizards matter. They're registering mudbloods, which is fucking freaky stuff. and they have that whole statue of the wizards on top, and then all the muggles are being crushed beneath. And like the way that Ron and Hermione, of course, under the effects of Polyjuice Potion, so they don't look like themselves, but they're sitting there, the looks on their faces really sell kind of the horror of that whole thing. So this is the kind of dark, dark place that the entire wizarding world is in by the time
it's
you get to
this film. It's
under
a fascist regime. Yeah. It's, I mean, I think what lets you know right off the bat what kind of movie this is the opening scene, which is devastating. I remember being in the theater and it being a gut punch where you see the Dursleys leaving their own house, Ron off on his own, and Hermione erasing the memory of her from her parents.
Yeah, that's
which is
devastating.
Oh, dude, oh my haunting, God. I did never expected to see anything like that, and I was like really shocked that they went there. Like, they really went balls out and were like, nope, no fucking around with this one.
Especially since that's almost like Hermione preparing for her own death almost, too. And to see her kind of resolutely walk alone, and then the title comes up, it's great stuff. Again, it lets you know right away that this movie isn't playing around.
And I gotta say, my issues with the lack of action in a couple of the last few movies we talked about kind of goes away in the beginning of this one, because when the Order of Phoenix goes to escort Harry to safety, when they all end up taking like a potion to make themselves look like Harry, which I thought visually was very well done, there's this awesome chase scene where all these Death Eaters are chasing them while they're flying in the air. And I thought that was very, very thrilling. I love that sequence, actually. It's probably one of my favorites of the entire series because there's actual danger there. You're like, oh man, like this is no
Hedwig.
Holds barred. Yeah, exactly.
Hedwig dies. That's another loss of innocence moment. I mean, this movie provides you with plenty, but that's a moment because Hedwig was kind of Harry's first tie to the wizarding world. Hagrid gave it to Harry as a gift. And so that moment, I remember reading the book and just being completely shell-shocked that J.K. Rowling would kill off the bird. It's heartbreaking. Of course, Moody is also killed
off screen, which is something that I want to touch back on. We're going to touch on it more when we get to part two, but don't do that. Don't do that with character. I mean, granted, man, I did not get a ton of screen time in the films he's been in. I mean, of course, he got a lot in Goblet of Fire, but it wasn't really him.
It's not really him, yeah. You know,
don't kill characters off in off-screen land. You split this book into two movies. You can afford to just show us a quick shot during the chase.
Yeah, I agree.
But they do it in the book as well. I mean, I think the point is to, like, everyone's kind of off on their own and it's complete chaos. So that there's kind of that suspense when they finally get back to the Weasleys and they kind of come in and everyone's on edge, like, who's coming back and who's not. That kind of adds to the suspense. You're right. It would have been great to have a noble death scene for Mad-Eye, but
like, you didn't even have to have him have a heroic death scene. Let us just see him dead.
I agree, but I don't think it's as big a deal as in part two, which we'll get to.
But come on, you're the one in every other movie we talk about. Like, that's one of your pet peeves, Saucy, is that you hate seeing important characters killed off in the beginning of the sequel without giving them any. And it's not like they didn't give them any respect, but they do it off screen. Then it's like, oh, he's dead. That's it. And you move on from it. And there's not really an emotional impact, even though I also see where Nick was going with that. It's not a character that has had a lot of screen time throughout all of the films, but still. Again, the way this movie opens up, it's like I would have liked some emotional weight when a character passes away.
I think they were just trying to stick to the books. But that's something that I love about this movie. Again, as a purist, as someone who's read the books 50 times over, I love the fact that they include practically every single detail from the books. It makes for such a well-rounded experience, and they add things as well. Probably the best example of which is the dance scene between Harry and Hermione. They kind of share this moment alone together, and it's very sweet and very genuine. They just share this little dance together, and it's very enjoyable.
Do they grope
sweet.
Each other sexually?
I don't know, Justin. Do they? It's a PG-13.
They certainly a PG-13. I'm sure they totally could. They could even do it, and you wouldn't see it, but they would be able to do it. So,
but there is tension that sparks between Harry, Ron, and Hermione because Ron is obviously crushing on Hermione, and there's a little bit of a tension there because Ron seems to think that Harry and Hermione are, going behind his back.
Well, to be fair, he is under the influence of the Ring of Power. I mean, the locket. So, he's having those dark and kind of evil. It's hard not to go to that place. It's really, really hard. They escape. They get the locket from Umbridge, who is criminally underused in this film, even though I just adore her. Yeah. But what really more can you do with that character that you didn't already do in Order of the Phoenix? It would have been overkill. They get the locket, and they're basically like trading it off back and forth so it doesn't affect any of one of them too many times. But like the thing that I kind of love about this, and I mentioned when we talked about Half-Blood Prince, the coming storm, and that's the way that I referred to it. And now in this film, the storm is most definitely here. You get it in that opening action sequence. Harry's no longer going to be safe once he turns 17. He needs to get somewhere safe where they can protect him. And literally the entire time, the Death Eaters are on their tail. You get to see Bill and Fleur's wedding. And then they get that warning during that the Ministry of Magic has fallen, and boom, all of a sudden the Death Eaters are on the wedding, and they're constantly being chased. And I like the way that they constantly paint the Death Eaters as a threat in this film, because you always feel like there's a threat looming. I said that last time in the Half-Blood Prince, that you feel like there's a threat looming out there somewhere, but you don't really get to see it. And in this film, you definitely get to see it. It's a vice just kind of closing around them every way they turn. There's just evil and Death Eaters and just insanity all around them.
I have a question. Why would they, in their right minds, have a wedding there when they know the Death Eaters know that location? Why would they do that?
Because we can't give in to terrorists, Justin.
Just
put everyone in one spot. So, hey, come kill us all now. We're all here. Come kill us. Come on. We'll all heal now.
I mean, the point was is that they were protected. You know, as long as the ministry stood, at least that's the way that I understood it. Like, they were protected.
Okay. That's why I'm asking, because I didn't understand,
the ministry falls, that's why all of a sudden they fall under attack. Like, at least that's my understanding of it. Like, there's a shield, like, a little protective magical whatever, charms and whatnot, over the thing so that Death Eaters can't get in. And, yeah, once the ministry falls, that protection breaks down.
And the minister of magic is killed.
Yeah. Played by Bill Nighy.
Yeah. I love his speech at the beginning of the movie. It opens, these are dark times. There is no denying.
Mr. Potter.
Bill Nye voice.
I love the way that he says Mr. Potter. Mr. Potter.
Mr. Potter. Yes.
But yeah, Lois Austin's right. So Ron has a moment and he runs off, because that's what Ron does. We've well established that at numerous points.
No, this is great. This is great character work.
I think it is. I don't disagree, but it's definitely, it makes sense for Ron's character to do it. It's kind of what I'm saying. It's right in line with his character. He's definitely got that jealous streak to him. And of course, under the influence of the Ring of Power, I mean, the locket, he's definitely going to magnify what he's seeing, that he thinks anyway, developing between Harry and Hermione as a threat. So he pieces out. While all this is going on, Harry's having all these visions, basically visions of what Voldemort is doing. He's captured Mr. Ollivander. He's torturing Grigorovich, the wand maker. And then we learn the thief that stole this wand that Voldemort is out there looking for, which of course is one of the Deathly Hallows, which we'll talk about, was Gellert Grindelwald, which of course we'll tie in. We'll get there on Thursday, guys, when we get to Fantastic Beasts 1 and 2. One of my favorite set pieces in the film as well is when they go to Godric's Hollow, and
yes,
Bathilda Bagshot, like literally death warmed over, like, you're not hiding it. You're not fooling anybody, Nagini, but they go in and they're just trying to learn more, and they're trying to find out more about what's going on. And it eventually turns into the snake. And I love, like, the snake
that
gets a lot of great stuff in these two movies.
Yeah, that sequence is haunting, because it's this creepy old woman watching them. I mean, Harry and Hermione are having their moment, kind of, they see the grave of Lily and James Potter. Yep. So it's this very emotional scene where they finally close the loop, and there's certain a sense of closure, Harry finally seeing his parents' grave. And then this creepy old woman is watching them, and then they follow her into this house, and she's not saying anything. And then she takes Harry upstairs, and Hermione looks up, and there's blood dripping from the ceiling. It's so crazy and intense. And then all of a sudden, like, Harry turns, and like this, like, her jaw, like,
unhinges, kind of.
Unhinges, yeah. And the snake comes out. It's so creepy. Yeah.
That's such a great great.
Justin, what do you think of the snake attack scene?
Oh, I love the snake attack scene. I love that whole scene in general. I love that atmosphere that's there. It's very haunting. It's very sad, but for Potter's character, it's something that needed to happen at some point. I was actually surprised. I mean, because I didn't read the books and I didn't know where it was going. Like, this needed to happen a long time ago. He needs to kind of face this and kind of embrace it and let go of it in a way. Not let go, but you know what I mean? You have to accept death. That's part of life. So I'm glad that we got to see that sequence. It was great for both characters to do that. And then, you know, Hermione's there. And again, that kind of confused me a bit because I'm like, are they actually going to end up together? I don't know. Because again, I didn't know what was to come or not. But I think that this movie and the sequel, which we'll get to, are more on my level because there is that sense of true adventure. There's some really serious dark shit going on, and it can get brutal when it wants to. So I really, really love that scene a lot.
The season as well is that, I mean, it's on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, and it's cold scene. And it's snowing, and it's beautifully done. It just looks beautiful.
I want to mention my absolute favorite scene and one of my favorite scenes in any Harry Potter film ever, The Tale of the Three Brothers, an animated segment. It's almost done in that kind of, it's like Tim Burton's old shorts, like Vincent. It's extremely beautiful and evocative sequence in which Hermione reads out the story of the Deathly Hallows and what they are. They're basically three magical objects that if you possess all three, you basically become the master of death. So you have the invisibility cloak, which is in Harry's possession. You have the resurrection stone. And then you have the Elder Wand, the most powerful wand in the universe. So it's an amazing scene. It gives you information, but it's not just an exposition dump. It feels like an integral part of the story. It helps move things forward in a way that's visually gorgeous to look at. In its own right, it's a very tragic and beautiful story.
I loved it. I agree with you completely, Lori Sauss. It's a great break in the film. Like, once you get to that part, it's just been kind of relentless pursuit by the Death Eaters. You've gone through just so many amazing character moments. And then the whole film slows down to really just set up part two, kind of a little bit. That's a little bit of what it is. But I think it's also necessary because there's a lot packed into this film. Like, a ton of stuff happens in this film. And I think it's nice that the film just kind of pumps the brakes for just a little bit, lets you relax.
Tells you a little story.
Tells you a little story. And yeah, I love the animation. I think the animation is beautiful.
The imagery of death is just amazing.
Haunting. And yet you're exactly right when you said it's a nice story, like all unto itself. It's a really, really nice, but also a really tragic story.
Yeah. And then we move on to Malfoy Manor soon after that. The heroes are captured. And
very easily, I might add.
Thank you, Justin. And they are sent to Malfoy Manor, where more brutal shit goes down. Hermione gets tortured by Bellatrix Lestrange.
Dude, that is one of the hardest scenes to watch. That fucking scene is cold. Like, that scene is just, and the way she screams, like, her screams are just blood curdling. Mm-hmm. Oh my god! And I will once again point out my love of Helen Bonham Carter as Bellatrix Lestrange.
That's what I'm saying. You finally get to see her, you know, flex her muscles a little bit as a villain, because she's great out of these movies. But I felt like up until this point, she kind of just comes and goes. She's there. She'll have her moment in like one quick scene, but that's it. But here we finally actually get to see her do something important. And I really, really loved her in that part.
And one of my favorite things in this film, it's not a favorite. It doesn't work at all, because it's a little bit like, you got to kind of give it the Clark Kent with the glasses thing. Like, Hermione curses Harry so that he isn't recognizable, but that is still very clearly Harry Potter. Like, of all the magic that you know, of all the different things we've seen in all these films,
he just looks like a deformed,
he just looks like a deformed version of Harry Potter. Like, they could have slipped him some Polyjuice potion, like, whatever. So it doesn't look like Harry. It's for me, it was just like, how do they not? And then, like, they're having Draco Malfoy, like, look at him, like, he's all getting up close to him. I'm like, what? What is happening right now? And then two times in that sequence, I talked about him long time ago, way back in Chamber of Secrets, but Jason Isaacs as Lucius Malfoy, twice Harry Potter just flat stuffs his ass, fucking sends him sailing across the room. I love it. I love those fucking, like, both times, and they focus on it both times, so you really get to see Malfoy just straight flying across the room. I love it. It's so rewarding.
The thing that's not rewarding about this scene is that we get the return of Peter Pettigrew, a.k.a. Wormtail, a.k.a. Scabbers. He does not get his in the end. In the book, Voldemort
his hand
is...
chokes him to death?
Yeah, Voldemort finds him and is angry that he's let them escape, and he enchants his silver arm that he gave him, or his hand that he gave him in Goblet of Fire after he chops it off. So he enchants that to strangle him. And that would have been awesome to see on screen, but instead we get like a slapstick moment, and I'm like, that's the last we ever see of that character? Okay.
And then, you know, this is one of the most important characters of this entire series. This is the character that deserves his own spinoff fucking trilogy, and that's what you're going to do? Maybe that was their idea. Maybe that's why you didn't see him like get choked out and kill like that, because they're like, you know, this is such an important character and an interesting character that he deserves his own trilogy later on.
He loves his
Well, it's an important... It's an important enough character, like he is basically the reason why all of this is happening, and you want to at least see him get his comeppance in the end, or get, see
it's
him
his fault.
Die.
He's the reason why Harry and Lily Potter were killed, or James and Lily Potter, excuse me, were killed.
We also see the return of another character, Dobby the House Elf. And Justin, I seem to recall from our Chamber of Secrets review that you said you wanted to see Dobby dead. You wanted him to die. So now we're at this point,
and I felt
do you
so
still
bad.
Feel that way?
I felt so bad for saying that, because Dobby actually he's a hero in this movie, and I actually grew to like him. I think he's just, my first impression of him is he's obnoxious, and yes, I'd like to strangle the shit out of him. The little bastard, shut the fuck up, Dobby. I hate you. I want to kick you in the face. But no. All jokes aside, I don't hate Dobby, ladies and gentlemen. I really don't hate him. And he does come in to save the day here. And he has a very tragic death on screen. And actually
it's
hits you very emotionally.
It's so
it
heartbreaking.
Because he comes in at the last minute. And I didn't expect him to come in at the last minute and save the day the way he does. And he's very noble about it. It really made me appreciate that character even more, but also wonder why he's not in more of the films than he is. But when he does pass on, Harry goes out of his way to make sure, which I thought was wonderful, that he's like, no, we're going to bury him with no magic. We're going to give him a proper human burial almost, which I thought was very, very special for the character.
Yeah, that was so heartbreaking. And then this film ends on, legit, the moment of Voldemort cracking open Dumbledore's tomb on some weird island somewhere. Like, man.
Yeah. If I seem to recall correctly, in the books, the tomb is on the Hogwarts grounds. I guess they thought that we don't want to see Hogwarts in this one. I think they wanted it to look more cinematic, maybe. I don't know. But
it definitely does. And then, of course, he steals the Elder Wand, which is in Dumbledore's possession. And
perfect way to end the movie, because it leaves you like desperate to want to know more.
Great cliffhanger ending of this one. Yeah. I think one of the best endings out of all of them, because it definitely, because it is a part one to a part two. So they were both filmed back to back, if I recall. So it's done perfectly to make you go, and I have to wait until I see part two. And this is exactly what you want your audience to do. So that way they come out in droves when the next one's released.
Well, and you know what? I want to get to final ratings here, because we've still got to get part two in here, but I mentioned it before. This was the first Harry Potter film I'd ever seen. I had never seen any other Harry Potter film. I'd never read any of the books.
And you saw it in theaters?
Before I saw Deathly Hallows Part 1 in theaters. In theaters.
Oh, awesome.
So, for me, it's a Part 1, but it's on its own. It's a great movie just on its own. Like, if this weren't a Part 1 of a Part 2, like, everything that happens in this film, like, it's got a perfect arc for a film. It's just structured so well, and my head is 100% off to David Yates, to Steve Clovis. Like, it's great the way that they're able to take this entire thing and turn it into like an actual movie by itself. I actually really, really love this movie, and this, like, I watched this movie, I loved it so much I binged all the other Harry Potter films before Deathly Hallows Part 2. Like, I fell in love with the whole thing because of this movie, and I've got to give it the rating, guys. I've got to give it a 10 out of 10 because I love it so much. It really was my entryway into this series. This movie's not my favorite Harry Potter film. Order of the Phoenix is by far, my favorite, but I love this movie. It's so well done. For a part one, I had no idea what was going on when I saw this. And I think it does a great job of introducing the characters, of selling the characters who they are, their relationships. Everything about it was just great. Just great. And 10 out of 10 is definitely a heart rating, as opposed to, like, you know, whatever. The film's definitely got some issues and whatnot, but I don't care. I just adore it. I adore it for how it brought me into this whole thing in the first place. So there it is. I'm going to throw it over to Justin first before we get over to the God of Podcasting.
Yeah, Mr. Potter himself. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think it was a very refreshing film compared to the ones that I watched prior to it. It actually feels more like an adventure. We get to leave Hogwarts, which I love. We talked about it in this part of the episode. I love the atmosphere of Hogwarts. I love the imagery of Hogwarts. But it actually felt like these characters are off on an adventure, and they're off trying to find these Horcruxes and really solve this so that Harry can get down and dirty with Voldemort. I mean, it really just takes you down on a path with these characters. Dirty. We see them develop. We see them, especially for their age. You know, they're definitely acting their age, and we're seeing what, you know, characters of this age would do in these situations. There's a little love triangle going on, kinda. And, you know, there's great action sequences, you know, to top it off. So for me, very great emotional weight. Everything you'd want out of a fantasy action adventure picture. 8 out of 10 for me. I think it's fantastic.
10 out of 10 for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. Yeah. There's not one thing I would change about this movie. Honestly, mature performances, some of the best in the series from all three of our golden trio. Crackling suspense, amazing action and imagery. I love the sequence. We talked about it earlier, but that that initial skirmish in the skies, and when Voldemort comes and he attacks Harry, and Harry breaks his wand, there's that image of Voldemort like floating in midair and the electrical towers collapsing around him and just the lightning all around him. It's the most epic, awesome thing you've ever seen. This is an incredibly involving film. It's a beautiful looking film, and it really delves deep into these characters that we've become so attached to over the years. So as a build up to the end of the series, it succeeds with flying colors as the penultimate chapter. It's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of downtime in this one, but I think it's necessary because there ain't no downtime in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. So let's talk about that one, guys.
You were right. When you told Professor Snape that one was failing you, it will always fail. I killed Snape. But what if the one never belonged to Snape? What if its allegiance was always to someone else? Oh, come on, Tom. Let's finish this the way we started it. Together.
It's time, gentlemen, to get on to climax. We're going to climax here.
The end.
Hard and fast.
And wet.
Well, only in the Chamber of Secrets, but yes.
Yeah.
Of course, it's time, guys. We got to move on to Deathly Hallows Part 2.
The battle between the good and evil forces of the wizarding world escalate into an all-out war on Hogwarts. The very first teaser poster of this movie was Hogwarts crumbling and on fire, and that was it. It definitely symbolizes the end of your childhood, basically.
Yeah.
Justin, so we just talked about Part 1. What were your overall opinions on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2?
I think it's probably one of my favorite films of the entire series.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it, and I think that it wouldn't be as good as it is without Part 1. And I'm still of the mind, and I know you disagree, that you could make Part 1 and Part 2 into one movie and just chop out a lot of, like, this is just me. Again, I haven't read the book, so there are scenes where I feel like they could have been cut down, and just I would have rather had, like, a nice 3.5, close to 4-hour movie. But I get why Warner Brothers did it. It's money, and it was at the time their most bankable franchise. And
over,
I mean,
$2 billion combined box office for these two movies. Yeah,
literally, like that. This franchise has made Warner Brothers like one of the most rich companies on the planet. But you know, this movie, like, it's set up perfectly by Part 1, and then we open with a great scene. Basically, after seeing them bury Dobby, Harry Potter asks Griphook, who is a goblin, also played by Warwick Davis. So he plays two characters in this series, which I was not aware of. And they're going to go break into Bellatrix's vault at Gringotts Bank. And they suspect a Horcrux might be there. And I feel like one of the more visually interesting things about these movies is the entrance going in there and trying to locate this. And then, of course, Brian, we find out that Griphook double crosses them. And then we get to see your favorite thing other than a giraffe in the entire world. We see an awesome looking dragon. And that was one of my favorite things. Like, oh, man, another great opening with a bang. I really enjoyed this opening a lot. I'm like, man, this is the movie for me, I think.
There's nothing in this world I love more, other than giraffes, as Justin said, is an awesome-looking dragon.
They both have long necks, too. A giraffe, a dragon, they both usually have long necks, tiny little head,
I don't know
head,
what that
right?
says about me, but...
One has wings, one doesn't. But, yeah.
But, yeah, this dragon is freaking awesome, and they clamber on its back, and...
They ride it! They ride the dragon! They fly out of there on its back, and it's like one of the... It's one of those scenes where I laugh... But I'm also like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I don't know. Like, I almost tear up thinking about it. Like, man, they're just riding. I looked at you when I was watching this for the first time. Like, they're riding a dragon. They're on the back of that dragon. They're riding the dragon.
That is a great way to open the movie, though. It's kind of fun. It's like this bank heist scene. Even though the stakes are still there, the tension's still there, it's a nice little brisk, exciting sequence.
And we get to see Hermione actually try to disguise herself as Lestrange.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
Because it's Helena Bonham Carter acting as Hermione, acting as Bellatrix. So it's great.
I wish I could share Justin's enthusiasm about part two. Now, there are scenes in this movie that I adore that are... series bests for me in terms of just overall love of a particular scene. This movie, however, I don't feel is a very strong entry. It's got all the payoff from this entire franchise. All of that's in here, and that stuff is great, but I feel like this movie is kind of haphazardly structured. There are times when the pacing is kind of breakneck, and there are times when it literally floors the brakes as hard and as fast as possible, and then you're doing nothing. And it's just, there are just so many moments in this movie where I'm just when I was rewatching it, especially, I'm just like, I didn't remember the movie being this slow and this kind of almost boring in a couple of moments.
This is the least boring movie out of all
kidding.
These, man.
Not even kidding. I don't know. I feel like, especially like I said, I think the structure of this movie doesn't do it any favors. And
it
that's
doesn't.
Definitely because it's a part two, because it's kind of, you know, it's a definite lead off from part one, which, like I said just a few moments ago, I think it was structured beautifully as a film all unto itself. This, I don't feel like it is. I feel like it's just not all there, but it does have just some of the most rewarding and amazing scene. So I still really, really enjoy this movie. Don't get me wrong, but I just don't feel like it plays as well and flows as well as it could have as a film.
I agree with you there. I think that just is down to the nature of the beast and that it is the second half of a story.
Yeah.
I disagree with you about there being slow parts because the pacing is, as you said, breakneck. We're thrown right into it immediately. And once Harry makes it back to Hogwarts, it's like nonstop action. When Harry returns to Hogwarts, he makes his triumphant return.
And Snape goes out like a bitch.
Confront Snape. Yep. Snape's getting reinforcements, Justin. He doesn't go out like a bitch.
He's like, I'm a bitch. I'm leaving this motherfucker. I'm like, come on, man. Building up this character, I was expecting at least something. But he's like, nope, I'm out of here. Bye.
See, this is one of my favorite scenes in the entire film and the entire series, really, because it's obviously Harry, the first time he's gotten to confront Snape after killing Dumbledore. And like, I love Radcliffe's performance in the scene. I think it's fantastic. And then the way that Professor McGonagall steps in there to protect him, and like she spars with Snape and really drives him off.
Very briefly.
But you also have to remember, Justin, that Snape doesn't go out like a bitch because
he's the most heroic character out of all of them.
Again, This is based on me watching it from start to finish. That was my initial thought watching that.
Man.
Because this whole time, you've been lying to me, Sauce. You're like, no, he's good. No, he's bad. No, he's really a good guy. No, he's really bad. He's the last thing you told me before this was, he's definitely a bad guy. Don't ask me again about it. And then I'm like, oh, so you fucking lied to me. Again, you lied to me again. I'm just saying, no, the way he goes out, like, I just expected much more from the character, but I understood by the end of it why he did exit the way that he did.
So while, you know, we've got the scene at Gringotts Bank, and then they go back to Hogwarts, and then in the meantime, the Battle of Hogwarts happens, which gives us some really, really, we get to see a ton of characters, and I mean a ton of characters in these sequences, even if you only get them for like a few little shots here and there. And I, overall thoughts in the Battle of Hogwarts, because for me, there's some really great stuff about it and I love it, but I almost feel like as far as runtime of the film, as far as like the length of the film, I almost feel like it's over a little bit too quickly.
100% agreed with you. And this is my main problem with this movie is that if you're going to split it into two parts and you're going to make part one, a 2.5 hour long movie where every single detail from the book is included, make part two the same thing. Instead, what they do in part two, it's a 2 hour movie and they leave out a lot of important details that I feel like are important, you know, are necessary.
I wondered if that was the case too.
A lot of character deaths that would have been amazing to see on screen. Again, I think they were worried about the PG-13 rating because, you know, in the books, again, we see a lot of characters die tragically and horribly and in ways that might have earned this film an R rating. In one scene, we see Greyback, the werewolf Death Eater, basically killing Lavender Brown.
Yep.
He's leaning over her and he's like biting her, like chewing her. And then he looks up like there's no blood, there's zero blood. It's all
clean.
A little bit too clean. Neat. Yeah. And then a little bit too Lupin and Tonks. We should have seen them die. We should have had a scene where they die. The scene where Fred dies in the book is one of the most tragic and heartbreaking things you'll ever read because he's still cracking jokes, you know, and he's still his same old self as he's fighting off these Death Eaters and he dies laughing. And it's so tragic. And these are things we needed to see and that we were deprived of that.
Especially Fred and Lupin. Those are two of the most egregious ones for me because Lupin, especially all the way back to Prisoner of Azkaban, Lupin's been such a huge part of this entire series. And
he really takes a backseat.
Takes a huge backseat. Fred has been in it since the beginning, all the way since the very beginning, since part one. And we don't get to see, I mean, I love the scene where the Weasley family reacts to his dying. Like that to me is great.
That's rough to watch. Yeah.
But they could have still had that when we see the character's death, but then we see because Ron wasn't there. So then we see Ron react to it and like the whole kind of family come together. I still think that you needed to see those characters. I agree with you there. It's too brisk. Like the battle, the whole series has been leading up to this moment. And like, this was the whole reason they had to kill Dumbledore was because they needed to be able to attack Hogwarts. Hogwarts was like that last basically safe haven that all of them had. And then the whole big thing where they cast that big protective shell over the top of Hogwarts is dispelled in like 10 minutes of screen time. Like it's so quickly, like the whole battle just feels too fast to me, but that's because the movie's still got so much more stuff to do. It's like it's anticlimactic.
That's why I feel like they needed to extend it a little bit. If they really wanted to give us that epic finale, why not make it a 3 hour movie and just include all this stuff? You know what I mean?
I agree with you because this is the thing that I've been wanting to see. This entire time I've been watching all these movies, this is what I've been wanting to see, is this epic battle. And though I totally agree with both of you, I wanted more of that. I feel like what I did get to see was extremely well done, and I really enjoyed it a lot. So, I mean, it's really entertaining to see when you've been watching these movies and you've been spending so much time at Hogwarts, you're actually seeing a battle occur there, like for me, and like people actually getting off, and like people laying down on stretchers, and like, you know, like, shit's going down. Like for me, I was like, this is the moment that I needed in these movies where it got that serious. But again, you're coming from a different standpoint, Saucy, because you've read all the books. So I don't even know what they're leaving out. And Nick, I get where you're coming from because you know, when you reflect this movie compared to part one, it does go by way quicker. It doesn't give you nearly as much time developing things. And you know, I would have preferred, yeah, give me 10 more minutes of the battle. I would have loved that.
I think this is one of those things where they didn't necessarily keep all of the details from the book in it, but I think it's one of those things where beat for beat following the story of the second half of the novel of the Deathly Hallows probably didn't do the screenplay as many favors, because it shifts what probably should have been like the battle. Like when you watch a movie, like just as a cinema goer, like the big battle, the big climactic battle,
that's what you look forward to.
It's toward the end of the film, or it's like maybe the beginning of the third act or the end of the second act or whatever. This is like the first act of the film still. And it's over really quickly. Comparatively speaking,
I mean, the battle goes kind of throughout,
sort of, but then there's a lull, and then it hangs and whatnot. But to move on from
peaks,
that,
it peaks quick. It does peak quick. I know what you're saying. Peaks quick. It's still going on, but there's not as much tension. It's like not as vast and large as it was earlier on.
Yeah. So to move on from that, we get, of course, meanwhile, Voldemort is having problems, we'll say, with the Elder Wand. And so he believes that it's not answering to him because he's not its true owner. So he has to kill the wizard that, you know, is the true master of it, which he believes is Snape. And even in this moment in the film, when you still think that Snape's a bad guy, God, his death is fucking hard to watch. His death is so fucking hard to watch. First, fucking Voldemort slits his throat. Sort of in a PG-13 movie, so you see like a little bit of blood and that's it. But then, like, dude, the scene when like they're outside, Harry, Ron, and Hermione are outside, and you just see Snape against the glass, and you just hear Snape's body repeatedly thudding against the glass as the snake bites him over, dude, that
again
shit is,
and again. Yeah.
Oh my god, man. Ugh. What a great scene. Just again, I there are so many moments in this film that are just so beautifully done. I just wish the whole film was to that level, but man, that's one of the most effective scenes in the entire franchise right there. It's so amazing.
I'd love to hear, Saucy, how you felt watching it in the theater, but I have to say, I'm coming from a different standpoint because I love Alan Rickman, and I'm watching this movie for the first time knowing that Alan Rickman is no longer with us and realizing not only how important he was to this entire series, but how great of a character actor he was. And this was such a perfect role for him. He just literally embodied this character. And you're right, Nick, totally. Like, I agree with you 100%. I was still up until that point thinking he's a bad guy because Lois Us fucking lied to me the whole time. Like, yep, he's still a bad guy. He's bad for good. He's really evil. That's it. And then I see this and I'm like, oh my God, he's almost sacrificing himself in a way for Harry. And then when you learn that this whole time behind the scenes, he agreed to protect Harry to Dumbledore, and he agreed to kill Dumbledore so that all these things could happen for Harry. It's like, wow. I almost cried.
In our part one spotlight, we mentioned this, and I know Loisos talked about it back then as well, but Rowling talked to Alan Rickman before she'd even ever written Deathly Hallows or any of these other films. She talked to Alan Rickman and she said, okay, this is Snape's deal. And so Alan Rickman knows all this as he's doing the character all throughout all these films. We don't know it, of course, but it's such an amazing payoff when you finally learn the truth of his entire character. Like, Dumbledore was dying anyway from taking the power of the ring in.
Exactly.
It's Dumbledore's idea for Snape to kill him. It's like, listen, you know Malfoy's supposed to kill me anyway. You do it, because then Voldemort will trust you and it'll let you get close enough into that inner circle to be able to kind of
so that Harry can come in and attempt to destroy Voldemort. Yeah,
it's so amazingly well done. It's just, it's kind of one of those things as an audience where you're like, holy shit, you know? Where it makes sense, like his disdain for Harry because of how much he's like his father makes so much sense, because he utterly detests James Potter. But then, like, at the same time, he still has that protective spirit, like, because he loves Lily so much.
And then in this movie, you also learn his love of Harry's mother And you get to see, oh, wow, okay, so he had a relationship with her earlier on. So, of course, he has a huge issue with Harry's father for all the bullying that he went through, but he had a true love for Harry's mother. And it's almost like he made a pact with himself that, you know, I'm going to protect him, even though he legitimately seems annoyed by him on plenty of occasions, but he's still there as a protector behind the scenes.
Some of the best acting I've ever seen from Alan Rickman is when he comes into the house after Voldemort has killed Harry's parents.
Harry Potter was also the fattest baby on the planet.
Very chubby cheeks.
So
extremely
fat.
Chubby cheeks. But when he walks in and sees her body on the ground, and like that part where he doubles over and just starts sobbing and like holding her body and just
extremely
like that moment.
Effective.
Yeah, it kills me every time. And I did cry the first time I watched this movie. I did cry in the theater. And
you get that one moment at the end. You finally get to the end of you know, Harry looking through the memories in the Pensieve. Dumbledore turns to him and Snape summons the Patronus that leads Harry to the Sword of Godric Gryffindor in part one. And you learn all this stuff. And then Dumbledore turns to him and he's like, still? And Snape just turns back.
After all this time.
Always. It's amazing. And to think, mm-hmm. It's one of those things when you think Rowling had this planned all along. Like, Rickman knew all along that this is where this character was going and that this is what this character was doing the whole time. It's amazing. Amazing. That whole arc of it is just beautifully, beautifully done.
So from here, Harry realizes that he himself is a Horcrux. Am I correct in thinking that? So then
that's right.
He decides to go out and basically sacrifice himself to Voldemort?
That's right. Which, again, is what makes Harry such a phenomenal character and what makes him... it's just incredibly brave what he does. He knowingly faces his own death.
And the scene between the three of them as well, when Hermione especially realizes what he's going to do.
Again, Ron taking a back seat. Yeah. Ron just kind of stands there. Again, this is a problem I have with David Yates' direction. Like, I feel like Ron should be more involved.
Although Ron has those great moments, especially in this film, where he really is clever on a couple of occasions and really surprises Hermione. Of course, I know, Loisos, that you get a ton of that in the books. And everything, but in the movies, you don't. Ron's kind of bumbling in a sense. Like,
Ron has a lot of great moments earlier on, but I'm talking about the more emotional moments. Like, I don't know what was holding them back from having Ron be more loving towards Harry. I don't know if they thought, like, oh, we don't want to think, we don't want people to think they're gay.
No, do you think it's possibly that Yates believed that Grint's performance wouldn't be on par with the rest of the cast?
Maybe.
Yeah, because I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I think he's very good in these movies, but I feel like compared to the rest of the cast, he probably is the weaker link out of all the rest of them. Just being completely honest.
It's possible. I just wish there was at least a little something because Ron and Harry just kind of look at each other right before Harry goes to die. There's not any like hug or there's no nothing. I don't know. It's a very weird decision to have Ron just kind of take a back seat. But anyhow, so yeah, you have that sense that scene of closure between the three of them before Harry goes into the forest. And again, another extremely emotional scene. I love that line that was used in all the trailers where Voldemort says, "The boy who lived come to die." It's great. It's so good. And Ralph Fiennes is amazing in that scene.
Yeah, we need to talk about how important his performance is out of the movies
so
he's involved
in both of these
literally
movies.
I have to come out and say it now because it needs to be said. I've seen this character named on so many lists of, you know, movie outlets and entertainment websites as being one of the best villains in cinematic history. And I never understood that. I just saw the imagery and said, you know, maybe one day I'll understand that. But upon watching this movie, I totally understand that now because the performance is so amazing. And this villain is just so intriguing, but so menacing. It definitely is. It's on par with the Wicked Witch of the West or the Joker or Hannibal Lecter. You name it, he's right up there because he's so scary. But yet he has his own agenda. And you can kind of believe where he's going with it, and you can kind of almost get behind it in a way. So that those are the best villains to me, where you're like, you can almost relate to their agenda in a way. But man, Fiennes is just brilliant.
Amazing.
I just wish you got more of his actual, I don't know, what is he supposed to look like in the books? Is he supposed to look like how he looks in the movies?
Yeah, the main difference in the books is that his eyes are red and like snake-like. So he has like snake pupils for eyes. I think they wanted to give him a more human look in the movies to get Ralph Fiennes' performance.
I think that was a really good choice. So I have to ask both of you, though, while we're on this subject of him, because he is one of the most important things of the series. Do you both believe that this villain is one of the best cinematic villains of all time?
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
And the reason why that is because it is so well-rounded. It's not just I'm evil, but it's evil that's trying to feign compassion.
Exactly.
I love the moment where he invites people to come join their side. And when Malfoy walks out and Voldemort gives him the most awkward hug in the universe.
That hug, man.
People in the audience were laughing, but I think it's really chilling because it is Voldemort's attempt to try to appear compassionate to the other side, but it just doesn't work at all because he doesn't have love. He just doesn't have love inside of him. He's so far removed from being a human being that anything that he does to attempt to appear more human just looks alien and bizarre and creepy. Yeah.
One character I think we need to bring up real quick that we haven't talked about at all in this movie and definitely needs to be brought up again is Neville Longbottom. Like, how have we not brought up that character again? Because you guys told me the whole time we were watching these movies, you're like, yo, they go out of their way in the later movies to make this dude ugly because he's like a fucking male model. And you see it in this movie, you're like, oh my God, like, you can't hide how good looking this dude is.
He's clearly hot now.
He's clearly very attractive, but he comes in, he's
hide it.
And after those earlier movies where he's like, you know, being bullied, he's kind of meek and, you know, a very weak character. And now he's like strong and he's going out and he's just like, basically like he's standing up to Voldemort. He's like, fuck this. We're going to fight your ass right now. Like, I'm not backing down from you. And I actually loved that. I'm like,
yeah, the another one of the most rewarding scenes in the film is him standing up to Voldemort and being like, no, you know, Harry's gone. Harry's not gone. It doesn't matter. We're not going to give in. We're going to keep fighting you. And then, of course, past that, you get the just absolutely incredible scene of him cutting Nagini's fucking head off.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, so incredible.
Epic.
Oh,
epic.
My God.
And I want to mention Voldemort's reaction to when everyone assumes Harry to be dead and Voldemort's gloating about it and Hagrid is holding Harry's dead body, and the part where Harry just like rolls out of his arms, Ralph Fiennes' reaction is just phenomenal, filled with rage and disbelief, and it's great. And he keeps throwing spells at Harry to try to kill him, but we have to talk about one scene that happens before that, and it's the King's Cross Station scene.
Ooh-ee-oo.
That and Snape's backstory scene are two of the best scenes in Harry Potter history, but the King's Cross Station scene, Harry is kind of in this other dimension, I guess, like this afterlife. A beautiful exchange between Dumbledore and Harry, and probably my favorite bit of acting from Michael Gambon as Dumbledore.
Yeah. It's great to see him one more time just come back, and you're absolutely right. I love that just exchange, because again, we talked about it in part one as well, where you get that scene, the animated scene of the Deathly Hallows, and between the Pensieve and this, you get the film just slows down and it just lets you live in the characters and kind of live and breathe with the characters for a while. And the Pensieve scene is as good as it is. I think that's probably a little too long for me. I think that probably, I mean, it has a lot of info to dump. I get it, but it probably goes on a little bit too long for me. But this I thought was perfect. I adore this scene.
Yeah, and just the dialogue, do not pity the dead, pity the living, and above all, those who live without love. Like, great, great lines that J.K. Rowling wrote. And they pretty much took that verbatim from the book, because why mess with perfection, really? when Harry asks them, like, is this all real or is it happening inside my head? And then his response is, of course it's happening inside your head. Why should that mean that it's not real?
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. I love it, love it, love it.
So I got to ask you guys, Nick, you came to the series at the end. Brian, you grew up with it. The ending battle between Harry and Voldemort, I think it's pretty fucking epic, dude. I think it's perfectly done. It's quick. It's not as long as I would have liked, but I wanted your opinion on this specifically because you waited all these movies to see it finally happen, like the epic showdown between Harry Potter and Lord Voldemort. Like, did it live up to your expectations? Do you think it could have been done better, or do you think it was well done? Like, was it perfectly well done?
I think it is well done, but again, details from the book that they should have included. In the movies, Harry and Voldemort face off alone, whereas in the book, everyone's there to watch it and witness it, and they're all reacting to it. And maybe they thought that would take away from the conflict.
I can see that. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
But
you probably couldn't get all the actors together on the same day of shooting.
that's possible. Also in the book, because all the Horcruxes have been destroyed by that point, Voldemort's body, when the curse finally rebounds and he's killed, his body just slumps over and he just keels over and is just laying there motionless, dead. Whereas in the movie, they made the choice to have his body just kind of
disintegrate
yeah. away and kind of go like almost like ash, just kind of float away. And that looks more cinematic. It kind of goes along with the fact that he's no longer human. He's no longer anything. Whereas in the book, it's like this is just a man, you know, and now that he's lost everything that keeps him, quote, immortal or enchanted, he's just a man and he dies like a man.
The problem that I have with the final battle is not so much with the battle itself, but it's with this whole plot point in this film about wand ownership, which I detest. Because to me, and Loisance, you'll have to fill in on the book part of it if it's a part of the books prior to Deathly Hallows or whatever, but this whole wand ownership thing comes out of complete left field to me in this film, wherein all of a sudden, like, we've seen wizards disarming wizards countless times in this series before this film or before these last two films, and it's never meant a fucking thing until it's this movie all of a sudden. And then it's so convoluted that you have to then, after that battle, have a scene of Harry explaining how the whole thing works afterward so that the audience understands, because otherwise the audience is going to be like, what? Like, it just, opposed to the Snape thing, which we know was planned, like I said, from the beginning, this to me just feels like it's like, I don't know if Rowling just didn't know how to do it, or whatever, like how to end the battle or whatever. Like, I think it's more poetic to have Voldemort ultimately kill himself than to have Harry killing him. But I hated, and I hated this whole idea of, well, I disarmed Draco. Draco didn't even have the Elder Wand at that point. That's not even the point. But I disarmed Draco back in Malfoy Manor, and he was the one who disarmed Dumbledore. So I was really the man. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, it's just, it's so convoluted. Like I said, you have to have a scene of Harry explaining it to the audience after it happens, just so the audience can be like, oh, okay.
I think that was to introduce a little bit of a mystery element to it. Who is the real master of the Elder Wand? Is it Voldemort? Is it Snape? Is it Draco? And it turns out to be Harry because of, you know, everything that happened prior. So I get what you mean. It does seem a little bit shoehorned in necessarily. To me, that's the least of this movie's problems, but I see where you're getting at with that. A problem that I have is when after Voldemort's destroyed and Harry's, there's a little bit of a calm. There's a little bit of a sigh of relief now that the evil is defeated. And all that Hagrid has to say to Harry after all that is he looks at him and goes, Harry. And then walks away. I'm like, that's really all Hagrid has to say? I don't know. That seems weird to me. But anyway, these are things that, again, if the movie were a little longer, they could have included more scenes of characters that we've grown to love. I mean, the fact that we don't get a whole lot of time with characters that aren't the Golden Trio would have just been nice to have had a little bit more closure with those secondary and tertiary characters.
Cutting stuff out of this film, you end up with the great scene. It's a great moment between Molly Weasley and Bellatrix where she...
Oh my God, I forgot to mention
she that. Petrifies her and kills her, which
explodes her, right?
It's an amazing scene, but like... it just feels like, really, Molly Weasley?
Well, Nick, when like, we see it happen, there's no build up to that scene at all.
None. It just happens.
We're shown
none whatsoever. Weasley,
and then she does it, and then you're like, oh, that was supposed to be that
the first
like
time I watched
crowd cheering
the movie,
moment.
I was like,
but
was this supposed to be in the battle at Hogwarts earlier, and they just misplaced it in editing? Like, it almost feels like it's that out of place.
When it happens, I really did feel a little bit disappointed because Bellatrix is such a like. I feel like one of my favorite characters out of the series, even though we don't get to see her do all that much. I would like to see her do more personally, but no, that scene comes out of nowhere. Then it's like, oh, she's gone. Oh, okay. So that was supposed to be like a crowd reaction, like yes, cheers and clapping.
But the crowd did go absolutely insane all three times I saw it. That's the Ripley moment of the movie. You know, she says like, "Not my daughter, you bitch," and it's extremely satisfying. But it does come at a weird time, and I feel like if the movie had more of those moments, it would feel less out of place. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's my main problem with this movie. There are so many things that I love about this movie. As I said, it does leave a little bit to be desired after being with these characters for, you know, 10 years and 8 films. And it just seems like there was a little bit of a missed opportunity. But you get the three characters on the bridge of Hogwarts, and it's this very nice moment where the camera kind of pulls back and the music kind of swells and it fades out.
It should have ended it there. That's how I felt. I felt like watching this movie for the first time, and I'm sorry to cut you off. That should have been the perfect ending. Pull the camera back, see them standing on the bridge, end the movie.
But you have to have the epilogue, which some Harry Potter fans are not fans of. I personally am, because what this epilogue does is it makes you want to go back and start the series all over again with Sorcerer's Stone. It fills you with so much nostalgia, and it lets you know that Harry is okay. Like, you know, 19 years go by, and Harry has started a family. He's... The last line of the book, which of course they couldn't include in the movie, was the scar had not pained Harry for 19 years. All was well.
Why couldn't they use it in the movie?
What is a narrator going to show up and say, all was well? No, it's...
It would have been weird to have that narrator.
They could have.
Yeah. No, it's... Yeah, I mean, it's an iconic line for readers of the books, but it would have been awkward to include in the films. But it is kind of that deep sigh of relief that Harry is finally rid of the evil.
I think it's about time, though. We get down to ratings for Deathly Hallows Part 2, and I'm the one saying this, so I don't have to go first. I'm going to throw it to Nick, because I know he doesn't seem as keen on this one as he does on Part 1. So I got to hear from you first on your final thoughts and rating. 10.
I still really enjoy it. Okay. There's still so many like series-defining moments in this. There's just so many amazing moments in this, like we've already talked about, so I won't wax on about them again. But I just don't feel, as a film, I feel like this is clunkier. And it's weird because it's a shorter runtime. Like, you'd feel like it would be tighter, but it feels clunkier to me than Part 1 did. And I think if you're going to split a film, what I always say, if you're going to split something into two parts, you have to make each part work as its own movie. You can't just it can't do that. You have to make both of them work as their own movie. And I don't think this does to a degree. And that's what hurts it for me. But like I said, I think there's too many great moments, and there's too many moments that this entire series has been building to rate this movie poorly. If you're a fan of the rest of the franchise, minus Goblet of Fire, fuck you. This movie has to work for you on that level, at least, of just the culmination of everything that you've watched over 7 other films, now 8 films in total when you get to the end of this one. 7 out of 10. I'm going to pitch it down to Loy Sauce first, and we'll get back to Justin, who is going to rate this film too high, I feel.
I will adore this series for the rest of my life. I'm a better person for having seen these movies, for having read these books, for being a part of the fandom. 10 years, 8 films. We've watched these actors and these characters grow, watching this story become deeper and darker and grander and more urgent and more human. It's really just like this epic coming of age saga. I mean, when I grew up with these. So it means a lot to me, this final chapter, culminating everything, as Nick said. That being said, I think there are severe problems with the structure, with what they decided to leave out. certain things do not rub me the right way. But all in all, this is a satisfying final chapter, even if it's not everything that it could have been, it's everything that it should have been. It resonates with me. It's this pop culture phenomenon, and I will love it until the day that I die. I'm giving this movie an 8 out of 10. Justin?
Well, that's my name. Don't wear it out, baby. But yes, this is the end of this series, and I am very thankful for that. Extremely thankful. And I have actually had a very fun time watching these movies. I bought that 4K Ultra HD box set for a good reason, because I wanted to experience these films on the best medium possible. And I really did want to sit down and watch them, because I felt like it was something that was severely lacking out of my filmography. And I feel like this movie, Nick, you're totally right about it, is one of my favorites. So I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. I think this is one of the most satisfying movies of this entire series. It had adventure. It had great action. It had all the great character stuff from the other movies.
Yeah, yes, he's going to spank you with the belt now.
It skimps on some stuff from the other movies. But you know what? Like, I saw enough of characters sitting, staring into like blank walls and on top of mountains. Like, finally, give me some great action and some battle scenes and the epic showdown. And so what I was hoping for the entire time was a fantastic villain portrayed brilliantly by Ralph Fiennes. I just great. It's amazing. 9 out of 10 for me. Not one movie out of this entire series, I think, comes close to being a perfect movie for me. But this is one of the closest ones for me, because it's the finale. And it pretty much gave me everything that I would have hoped to have seen, except for the way they ended the film. But that's it for me. 9 out of 10 for Deathly Hallows Part 2.
And ladies and gentlemen, of course, we are giving away all 8 of those Harry Potter films on digital 4K. All you have to do is answer our trivia questions. If you've been listening and you've been entering all along, you've been getting one ticket for every single correct answer in this entire series. So we've got one more trivia question. We're combining these two together, so you're only going to get one out of both films. But Loisos, take it away. What is our final Harry Potter Spotlight trivia question?
Meow, 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 meow.
That's not a question.
Meow, 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 meow. I just wanted to do that one more time.
God damn it.
I'll never get a chance again.
You're not my dad.
Alrighty. So, the question is, what is Snape's Patronus? It's as simple as that. I'll say it one more time for those of you who didn't catch it. What is Snape's Patronus?
You get to see it in both films, by the way.
That's right. So, in both parts 1 and 2.
Yeah. So there you go. So down in the show notes and over on the post on Facebook, you'll find the link to the trivia question. Listen to the episode, answer the trivia question, and you get one ticket. Even if you've never listened to any of the other spotlights before, if this is your first time, why you started with part 7, I don't know, but that's what I did when I started the movie series, so who knows. Every single time you get a correct answer, you get one ticket in the drawing, and we're going to be drawing that. I think we'll give it like a couple weeks or something like that. Maybe not next week, but the week after that on the main show, we'll be giving away all 8 Harry Potter films on digital HD. It's amazing.
4K too.
Amazing.
4K. Yeah.
4K.
Guys, yeah. Guys, I'm melancholy. Because
I see a tear in your eye about to drop out of it. I see it. Literally, it's happening. Like, for real, I see it. This is because, no joke.
I love the series so much, and it always feels like there's a part of me missing when I complete it. But the best thing about these movies is that I can always go back and rewatch them all over again.
And that's why
except I knew for Goblet of Fire.
That important for you. And that's why I had to do this for you.
Thank you, Justin.
Above and beyond, because I gave you some shit. I was that immovable object that did not want to be moved at all when it came to these.
We had to use a cattle prod on Justin.
No,
we had to
you tie didn't. Him to a no, chair. No, you didn't. It's intimidating, and I'm not going to lie to our listeners. This is an intimidating franchise to get through because there's so many movies, and there's so much about these movies that you have to take in, and you have to really pay attention to and study. And that's why I envy you, Brian, because you've actually had the opportunity to watch these movies through and throughout numerous times. You've seen them in the theater. I feel like I would not be able to actually respectfully give these movies the proper rating and discussion that I'd like to without watching them each 5 times. And I don't have the opportunity to do that. I just don't have the time to do that. So I gave it my all, and I gave it for you. And I think this franchise as a whole is definitely iconic. I mean, I wish that I grew up like you did with a new one of these movies coming out every single year and being able to grow up with these movies as these characters grow up and seeing yourself in them and being able to relate to them. It's extremely positive experience and a special experience. And I'm glad that we got through it.
I just want to thank you guys for doing this series with me, and thank you, J.K. Rowling.
We also learned how horrible it is for the Epic Film Guys to try to plan out a multiple episode series about different films. Remember, and it's funny because pulling EFG history clips, last year at this time, we were already talking about doing this exact thing, and we were talking about how we were going to do one per month, and then we recorded one, and then we recorded two more, and we released them during the live stream for The Cure, and we were on track. And then I think it was after Justin watched Goblet of Fire, I think we literally, like Royce said, we had to chase him with a cattle prod and tie him down.
I think that killed his excitement for a while.
Did you guys blame me, though? You can't blame me, really, can you?
It's hard, especially when that's like literally the middle film of the franchise, so it literally just kills all the forward momentum, and you're just like,
I still don't think Goblet of Fire is that bad, but it is the worst of the series by far. Anyhow, let's not focus on that. Let's focus on all the great things this series has given us, and I can't wait for more. I want to see more of the Wizarding World, and we'll be talking about that next week on the show.
This week. Yeah, in 3 days.
That's right.
We'll be talking about it this week on the show.
Upon you guys listening to this episode, you still have our Fantastic Beasts 1 and 2, the Crimes of Grindelwald episode to listen to. We got more Wizarding World coming your way, baby. So,
yeah. And then after that, that's it. No more. It's done. It's over with. We're not ever going back.
Until Fantastic Beasts 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. And when they reboot it, and then we're going to have Harry Potter with a different actor. Then whatever. Literally, you know that Warner Brothers is going to milk the shit out of this. It was a memory that came to me.
I mean,
upon
it's hard to blame them, really,
for wanting to milk this. No, I don't blame them at all.
It's insanely lucrative.
There's so much they could do with it, too. There really is so much they could do with this world, I feel like. It's like, it's just like Marvel or DC. If they do it right, though, there's so much you could do with this world. I mean, it's...
The operative word is doing it right, but
well,
I won't say anything
else. Well, I guess we'll have to see what Nick thinks of Fantastic Beasts 1 and 2 before we go any further with that. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen. This is the end of our Original Potter series. Minisode.
Thanks
for listening.
We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, remember, answer that trivia question. You'll get one more ticket in the drawing. And like I said, not this Thursday, probably not even next Thursday. We'll give it a couple of weeks before we draw the final winner for all 8 Harry Potter films on 4K digital HD. And thank you all out there so much for listening, for following through this series. I know we have several people that really, really love the Harry Potter films as well that have been following along with the series as we've been releasing them. So thank you guys very, very much. We really, really appreciate it. Every time we post a new episode, now Brentley's like, finally.
We love you.
So yeah, thank you all so much for listening. For myself, for the sauce, the god of podcasting, the A1, Loy Choss, Loy Sox, Loy... Cox.
That's a lot of cum.
Yep. And for Justin, thank you all so much for listening. And of course,
Harry Potter! Harry Potter! Harry Potter.
We will see you at the movies.
Harry Potter.
Sweet.